Daily Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I am James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, January 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Rwanda denies it will no longer accept Democratic Republic of Congo nationals to stay in the country.
What we are calling attention to this time is the need for the international community not to ignore their responsibility in finding a durable solution for this forgotten group of refugees from the DRC.
Zambia's former ruling party rejects IMF allegation of corruption under President Lungu. Human Rights Watch says Africa needs to develop policies to monitor and respond to human rights abuses. A special counsel is appointed to investigate President Biden's classified documents. Amnesty International calls for prompt and independent investigation into alleged killings and burning of bodies by men believed to be soldiers in Mozambique.
What we know is that the burning of what appears to be a dead body by soldiers is deplorable and is likely a violation of international human rights law, which prohibits the mutilation of corpses and requires that the dead be disposed in a respectful manner.
And Sudan's education ministry officials closed schools for 2 weeks following teacher strike. Those stories plus Samson Omali's posts are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Rwandan government spokesperson is denying reports that Kigali will no longer accept Democratic Republic of Congo nationals to stay in the country. President Paul Kagame said on Monday this week that Rwanda was no longer going to bear the responsibility of the soaring numbers of Congolese refugees while the world keeps turning a deaf ear to the real security threats in eastern Congo. Spokesperson Yulan Mankolo says Rwanda has always welcomed people fleeing insecurity, persecution, and violence. However, she tells me that Rwanda wants the international community to take responsibility for finding a durable solution to what she calls this forgotten group of refugees from the DRC.
Rwanda has no intention to expel refugees. We always welcome people fleeing conflict and persecution and have done exactly that for decades now. What we are calling attention to this time is the need for the international community not to ignore their responsibility in finding a durable solution for this forgotten group of refugees from the DRC. The DRC government itself has shown no interest in safely repatriating its own citizens.
But it was President Kagame who first said that Rwanda was no longer going to be responsible for Congolese refugees.
Rwanda hosts over 75,000 Congolese refugees. Some have been here for more than 25 years. They are unable to safely return to their homes in eastern DRC because the DRC government has failed to provide basic security for them. The Congolese army is actually supporting irregular armed groups like the genocidal militia, the FDLR, that are attacking a section of the Congolese population based on their ethnicity. President Kagame is reminding everyone that there will not be peace and security in the Great Lakes region without responsible leadership and accountability.
What does your government mean, Yolan, when it says that nothing will change until the international community and the DRC government begin to deal with the true causes of the crisis?
The reason the problems persist in the eastern DRC is because both the Congolese government and the international community keep evading responsibility for resolving the true causes of this crisis. A major factor is the preservation by the DRC political and military leaders of the genocidal militia FDLR and its affiliates. They keep genocide ideology alive in this region. The FDLR, which is fighting alongside the DRC army, poses a serious threat to both Congolese Tutsi communities and to Rwandans in Rwanda. This is a problem for us.
Talking about responsibility, the DRC says it is your government that is creating the crisis by your support for the M23 rebels.
There are over 130 irregular armed groups in eastern DRC. Just last week, two new groups emerged and they killed even more innocent civilians. This crisis is caused by governance and security failures of the DRC government. Rwanda cannot take the blame for state failure in the DRC, and Rwanda alone cannot take the responsibility for the refugees that result from this state failure.
Yolan Mankolo is the spokesperson for the government of Rwanda. She was speaking with me from the capital, Kigali. Amnesty International has called on the government of Mozambique and the Southern African Development Community Mission in Mozambique, known as SAMIM, to launch a prompt and independent investigation into circumstances surrounding the alleged killings and burning of bodies in Mozambique. A 20-second video clip on social media shows what appears to be soldiers in uniform burning two corpses. Namibian President Hage Geingob and chair of the SADC organ on Politics, Defense and Security Cooperation has expressed regrets about what he calls a disturbing video clip circulating on social media. He says SAMIM leadership has instituted an investigation and would take appropriate measures in line with the international law of armed conflict. Robert Shivambu is the media manager for Amnesty International responsible for the Southern Africa region. He tells me that the burning of what appears to be dead bodies is a likely violation of international law and that security in Cabo Delgado must not come at the cost of human rights violations.
We believe that the viral video showing soldiers burning corpses is another horrific event that gives a glimpse of what is going on away from the attention of international media in this forgotten war of Cabo Delgado. So in terms of human rights violations, what we know is that the burning of what appears to be a dead body by soldiers is deplorable and is likely a violation of international human rights law, which prohibits the mutilation of corpses and requires that the dead be disposed in a respectful manner. So we are calling on the Mozambican authorities and the regional force, SAMIM, to launch a prompt, thorough, and independent investigation into the circumstances of these killings and the burning of the bodies. And anyone against whom there's sufficient admissible evidence should be prosecuted in fair trial. Security in Cabo Delgado must not come at the cost of human rights violation.
The president of Namibia, who is the chairperson of the SADC organ on Politics, Defense, and Security Cooperation, issue a statement,
yes,
saying that SAMIM leadership has instituted an investigation to establish the circumstances on the matter, a result of which will be shared once completed. Is Amnesty satisfied with that?
Yeah, we welcome that announcement, James. But what we are saying as Amnesty International, authorities must go further. They must leave no stone unturned in trying to understand exactly what happened and make sure that anyone who is found to have violated the human rights of those people that were seen burned is held accountable in court through fair trials. Because, you know, the military has got a very awkward way of operating where they might begin a witch hunt. So we are saying that they must hold anyone responsible for that in fair trials.
You said the video show at least one South African National Defense Force member who is watching and filming the event. Has South Africa said anything about it, or the South African Defense Force? Have they said anything?
Yes, the South African National Defense Force issued a statement on Tuesday. They are not distancing themselves from what happened. They are basically saying that they've launched their own investigation into the circumstances that led to the burning of those bodies, and they want to try to understand the role of their members. As you have seen, a uniformed South African soldier with a South African flag. So we are also saying to the South African government that they must be thorough in their investigation. They must leave no stone unturned in trying to understand what happened, because their forces cannot be seen to be violating human rights in this critical mission in Cabo Delgado. So they must make sure that anyone that is found to have violated the mission's rules and principles is held accountable.
Robert Shivambu is media manager for Amnesty International, responsible for the Southern Africa region. He was speaking with us from Cape Town, South Africa. Human Rights Watch says African nations need to do more to address the widespread displacement, killings, and other abuses that have come about from the continent's many conflicts. The rights group published a new report this week that summarizes human rights trends in 23 African countries. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi.
Mausi Segun is the head of Human Rights Watch Africa. She says that in many African countries, the population is caught up in conflict and simply has nowhere to turn.
Some of the most egregious human rights violations continue to cascade in the context of conflicts. Civilians have continued to bear the brunt of armed conflict, communal violence, political and social unrest, as well as government repression against critical and independent voices in several African countries. All of this have resulted in the destruction of lives and livelihoods.
According to ACLED, the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, there were at least 36,000 violent events and more than 50,000 deaths caused by violence in Africa last year. Human Rights Watch said in at least 15 armed conflicts in the Sahel, the Lake Chad Basin area, the Great Lakes region and the Horn of Africa, government forces and armed groups have been implicated in abuses against civilians.
Armed insurgents and in many cases government forces have inflicted terror and horror on civilians caught amid the fighting and forced hundreds of thousands of people to flee both within and outside their national borders, where many face discrimination, rejection, and sometimes violent repulsion.
Political, religious, and social intolerance has also increased, according to human rights researchers. The report said hate speech, attack on perceived political opponents, increased competition for resources, and other factors continue to fuel communal tensions, insurgency, and extremist recruitment in some African countries. The rights group praised the African Union and regional bloc, including ECOWAS, for taking action, such as reconciling Ethiopia's warring factions, condemning coups in West Africa, and refusing to recognize any attempt to seize power by force. Karine Kaneza Nantuya, Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch Africa Division, said the continental body is not doing enough to investigate human rights violations.
They do hold summits. They do talk about, for instance, the fact that they want the Peace and Security Council to conduct a study and assessment of the driving causes behind these different crises. But the gap in there is that there's no emphasis on justice and accountability issue, which should be at the core of their political decisions. One, to sustain those processes, and two, to provide redress and justice to the millions of victims that are affected by this crisis.
In the Central African Republic and Guinea, the rights group noted progress in ensuring justice for serious crimes. The International Criminal Court in The Hague has opened trials against militia leaders in the Central African Republic and Sudan, both of which have committed serious crimes against civilians. The Washington-based organization Human Rights Watch Africa Division urges African leaders and governments to implement policies to monitor and report human rights violations in conflict zones. They say such a move could help prevent atrocities and humanitarian crises. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, January 13. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Zambia's former ruling Patriotic Front Party has rejected a report by the International Monetary Fund saying corruption flourished under its government. The IMF said this week that political elite under former President Edgar Lungu bent rules to access lucrative government contracts. Current President Hakainde Hichilema pledged to tackle corruption and secured $1.3 billion in IMF debt support after Zambia defaulted to creditors. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka.
An IMF mission conducted a study last year focusing on governance weaknesses in Zambia at the request of local authorities. The assessment revealed serious weaknesses across all state functions, especially public financial management and the granting and managing of contracts of large infrastructure projects. It said the cost of high-profile projects were inflated by as much as 200% under the rule of President Edgar Lungu, with the extra money going into the pockets of well-connected Lungu supporters. Several former government officials were arrested on corruption charges. However, the arrests ended in bail, with defendants denying the accusations. No convictions have been secured. Patriotic Front spokesperson Rafael Nakachinda denied the IMF allegations of large-scale corruption under former President Edgar Lungu's rule. Nakachinda told VOA that while in government, the Patriotic Front had put in place many measures to ensure transparency and accountability in public procurement. He challenged the current government to take legal action against any of its former leaders found wanting.
We ensured at the time that we're in office that all government contracts go through a rigorous public bidding process to ensure transparency and accountability, and there are sufficient laws in Zambia to allow citizens to object, appeal, or challenge any government contracts they deem is shrouded in corruption or fraud. The tender process is a public process, and therefore those allegations are malicious.
Presidential spokesperson Anthony Bwalya told VOA that the IMF report is a confirmation of what the government of President Hakainde Hichilema has always known, that corruption in Zambia had worsened under the Lungu administration.
This is why now the president has made it a fundamental priority to win the fight against corruption as part of the process towards rebuilding the economy. We have set up the Financial Crimes Fast Track Court to expedite the process of holding perpetrators of grand-scale corruption accountable. We have also reformed the public financial management systems for better transparency, as well as reforming the public procurement processes.
For Boyd Molea, an economist at the research organization, the Center for Policy, Trade and Development, the IMF report is an important step towards enhancing the fight against corruption in Zambia.
We are happy that there is a drum up towards ensuring that the rule of law is brought back, that transparency is enhanced. For example, we still have yet to hear the progress of the access to information law in this country.
The Jesuit Center for Theological Reflection, a faith-based non-governmental organization that champions social justice, told VOA the alleged corruption affected the poor the most in the past 8 years because they were left without access to basic social services like water, food, sanitation, and health. According to the World Bank, about two-thirds of Zambia's population lives on less than $2 a day. Kathy Short, VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland announced Thursday the appointment of a special counsel to investigate President Joe Biden's handling of sensitive government documents. The announcement came hours after Biden acknowledged his lawyers had found more classified papers at his Delaware home from his time as vice president. The White House on Monday disclosed that similar sensitive documents had been located last November at a Washington research group set up by Biden after he finished his 8-year term as vice president. More from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
After President Biden on Thursday morning concluded prepared remarks about getting inflation under control, none of the reporters wanted to ask him about the economy.
Classified material, next to your Corvette, what were you thinking?
Biden acknowledged a small number of documents with classified markings have been discovered in storage areas and in file cabinets in his personal library at his Wilmington home.
My Corvette's in a locked garage. Okay, so it's not like you're sitting out in the street.
White House officials contend Biden's situation is different than that of the classified documents found during a federal search at former President Donald Trump's residence in Florida because Trump resisted efforts to review and return the materials while Biden is fully cooperating with the Department of Justice. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
After teachers in Sudan staged several strikes to demand salary increases, Ministry of Education officials have closed schools for a period of 2 weeks. Education officials also announced changes to the school calendar for the year 2022-2023, prompting some teachers to blame the ministry for doing little to increase teachers' salaries. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
A ministerial order signed by Garibella Muhammad Ahmed, the Director General at the Ministry of Education, ordered the closure of preschool, primary, intermediate, and secondary schools until January 29th. The order gave no reason for 2 weeks' closure, but Sudanese teachers recently staged a series of strikes demanding salary increase, which have affected a number of schools where teachers refused to work. Bashir Nail Taha, a member of the Sudanese Teachers Committee, says the ministerial order took them by surprise.
The Sudanese Teachers Committee will only support such a decision only if it is meant to create a healthy environment to resolve our demands, or if the ministry is trying to give enough time to find an amicable solution to the ongoing teacher strike. But if the decision is to postpone the solution, it will not solve anything.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum, Nile calls it an attempt to escape reality by the ministry officials who Taha says are ignoring teachers' demands. The teachers are demanding a 20% increase in the general education budget and an amendment to the salary structure that would raise the minimum wage by 100%. Nile says the teachers' demands are legitimate and they are aware that schools could be affected by the strikes.
We went on a series of strikes with the aim of keeping the school calendar stable and to give the ministry time to find a suitable solution. But unfortunately, our demands were ignored deliberately, and moreover, we were surprised to hear.
Abu Bakr Hamid, director of the private Tadamon Primary School in Omdurman, says school employees were shocked by the ministry's decision to suspend schools at a time when students are preparing to take exams. He says the government should address the demands of the teachers without shutting down the schools. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport in Algeria, where the biannual African Nations Championship, CHAN, one of the most unique international competitions in world football, kicks off today. Countries competing in the CHAN can only select players who play for their country's domestic leagues. The three-week-long event will be played in four Algerian cities, including the capital Algiers, Annaba, Constantine, and Oran. The Desert Foxes are among the 18 countries playing in the tournament that will end on the 4th of February at the Nelson Mandela Stadium in Algiers. Morocco are the two-time defending champions and have now decided to take part in the African Nations Championship despite earlier insisting they were cancelling their participation due to the closure of Algerian airspace to Moroccan planes, according to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Staying with football news, Mohamed Salah, Egypt and Liverpool winger, has been included among the nominees for the FIFA's Best Award. Also included is Sadio Mane, Senegalese footballer who plays as a forward for Bundesliga club Bayern Munich. Fresh from their brilliant performances at the World Cup, Lionel Messi and Kylian Mbappe are among the nominees, while Cristiano Ronaldo has been left out. Bayern Munich manager Julian Nagelsmann has announced that injured star forward Sadio Mane will come back a bit earlier and may feature in the Champions League last 16 clash against Paris Saint-Germain. Speaking on Thursday from Bayern's winter training camp in Qatar, Nagelsmann told reporters that Mane was making better than expected progress in his return from the right fibula injury, which ruled him out of the World Cup. Mane has scored 6 goals and made 3 assists in the league since making the move from Liverpool to Bayern in the summer. In swimming news, Tunisian swimmer and Olympic champion Ayoub Hafanoui on Thursday bagged the gold medal in the 800 meters freestyle at the TYR Pro Swim Series in Knoxville, USA. Hafanoui finished first after clocking 7 minutes 53.10 seconds. In athletics, major marathon winners Albert Courier from Kenya and Ethiopian Shura Kitita, as well as 2015 world champions Girme Gebrselassie, are among the many additions to the men's elite field for the Boston Marathon on the 17th of April. Organizers of the World Athletics Elite Platinum Labor Road Race have announced. This week's announcement expands upon 4 previously announced men's entrants, including world record holder and double Olympic champion Eliud Kipchoge, reigning Boston Marathon champion Evans Chebet, 2021 winner Benson Kipruto, and 2-time victor Lilisa Disisa. It brings the total of sub 2 hours 7 seconds performance in the field to 15. 8 of those have bettered 2 hours 05 seconds. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, January 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend.